This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Tuesday, May 27th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, and we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. The Illinois House and Senate last week approved separate budget packages. With time running out before the legislature's scheduled adjournment, there's uncertainty if lawmakers can come together on one spending plan. Sean Crawford has more.
The House budget includes various funding options, ranging from a more flat-level approach to big increases. The Senate is more in the middle, but still relies on the approval of some controversial measures to generate revenue. What both budgets have in common is that neither has been embraced in the opposite chamber. With Saturday as the target date for ending the spring session, Democrats in control in both the House and Senate say they want to wrap up their business by that time. That means this week will likely include plenty of private meetings among budget negotiators, making the job more difficult as a lack of new money to spend. Also unknown is how Governor Rod Blagojevich will react if a budget reaches his desk. The governor has been cut out of the talks but has the authority to reject legislation. Blagojevich has been focused on a statewide infrastructure program, but lawmakers have seemed content to push off those discussions for now. I'm Sean Crawford.
A panel of Indiana lawmakers will meet this summer in an effort to come up with legislation on illegal immigration. The Senate and House each passed versions of a bill earlier this year that sought to punish employers who knowingly hire illegal immigrants by revoking or suspending their licenses for repeated offenses. But the session ended without a law being enacted. Business and Hispanic groups opposed the legislation, claiming it could lead to racial profiling and unjust penalties. Republican Senate President Pro Tem David Long of Fort Wayne says he hopes the study committee will get a good grasp on what illegal immigration is costing Indiana government and society. The R. Kelly child pornography trial resumes today after a week of sometimes disturbing and sometimes impassioned testimony for the prosecution. Speculation as the trial began was that prosecutors might show the 27-minute videotape at the center of the case days or weeks later to allow jurors to brace themselves for the sexually explicit footage. They opted instead to cut to the chase. Within just hours of their opening statements last week, prosecutors entered the blank VHS tape into the record as People's Exhibit No. 1 and played it in open court. The R&B star is charged with child pornography for allegedly videotaping himself having sex with an underage girl. He has pleaded not guilty and faces up to 15 years in prison if convicted. The jury deciding the fate of political fundraiser Tony Resco is scheduled to meet again today after a four-day weekend break. Robert Wildebohr has more.
So far, the jury has spent five full days considering the evidence that was presented during 7 weeks of testimony. Resco is facing 24 charges, and jurors are going through each count deciding whether there is enough evidence to support a conviction. But a number of the charges seemingly have little to do with Resco. For example, count 4 is a wire fraud charge for a phone call made between two co-schemers. Resco's not on the call. Nonetheless, prosecutors have argued that Resco was directing the scam, so he's responsible for the acts that were done to further it. Jurors are scheduled to deliberate today, tomorrow, and Thursday. They have Friday off as one juror had a scheduling conflict. I'm Robert Wildebohr.
Drivers are paying more to fill up their tanks, but the rise in gas prices is also putting pressure on a non-mobile population. Jenna Dooley has that story.
Seniors who can't get around themselves depend on charity programs to deliver them warm meals. These visits also provide daily checkups on the homebound. The Meals on Wheels program has sites statewide which serve more than 30,000 people each month. The program relies on volunteers to deliver the meals, but drivers are not reimbursed for gas. Charles Johnson is the director of the Illinois Department on Aging. He says the increase in fuel prices is falling on the volunteers.
We don't have the money to start reimbursing all of the volunteers. And a lot of the volunteers are also older people who are on fixed income. So we do anticipate that this problem will exacerbate itself if the gas prices continue to be as high as they are.
Johnson says the agency is against consolidating routes because the meals need to stay hot. In the meantime, he says local sites are trying to raise private donations because he doesn't expect any increase in state funding. The situation is different in Chicago, where drivers are reimbursed for mileage. I'm Jenna Dooley.
Authorities in Kankakee County are turning to a forensic anthropologist as they try to identify remains found in a field last week. Coroner Bob Gessner says an autopsy was performed on the remains on Sunday, but the examination didn't conclusively determine a cause of death. Gessner says he isn't sure if the remains are that of a man or a woman, although 90% of the remains were recovered. He says that's enough to get a DNA match and enough for a full dental examination. The remains were found Friday afternoon in the eastern part of Kankakee County. At least one Illinois Republican is switching sides on the hotly debated GI Bill, which would pay college tuition for veterans of recent wars. Congresswoman Judy Biggert says she originally voted against the bill because the domestic spending portion of it didn't include money for Illinois research labs. She says now that the Senate has added those funds, she's jumping on board.
You know, sometimes you have to vote against something to try and get them to change what's in there before the bill is finished. So as it's moving through, it's gone over to the Senate and found out that they were going to include the money for Fermi and for Argonne. So to me, that makes the bill something that I can vote for.
A spokeswoman for Scott Harper, Biggert's opponent in the 13th District, says the congresswoman is being disingenuous. President Bush has pledged to veto the bill, saying it might encourage troops to drop out of the military. But Biggert says Congress likely has the votes to override any potential veto. That clip you're hearing is from the soundtrack of the new Indiana Jones film. It was composed by John Williams, but wouldn't be possible without the efforts of University of Illinois English professor. The continuum fingerboard is often described as a fretless keyboard, an instrument which depends more on what the player does with their fingers over the nylon surface than the sound itself. Studio musician Randy Kerber says he was encouraged by the myriad of possibilities when preparing music for Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. The fingerboard was invented a few years ago by Leopold Hocken, a professor of electrical and computer engineering. It's also been used by Led Zeppelin keyboardist John Paul Jones and Terry Lawless, a keyboardist who has played with U2. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Can a rich person choose to become a pauper? You'd think that the answer was always yes, but the analysis changes if there's a divorce involved. Commentator Amy Guida tells us about a seminarian, a monk, and their former jobs in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
So let's say that there's a marriage that ends in divorce. The husband makes a lot of money, and just to be clear, it doesn't have to be the husband here. The wife could play this money-making role too. But the divorce sparks something. He leaves his high-paying job to enter a seminary. Yep, that would be one of those career moves that doesn't make much sense if one is focused on the bottom line. That's the scenario playing out in New Jersey right now, where the former governor of the state, James McGreevy, is in the middle of a divorce. His wife wants some form of support, but the former governor claims that he has no earning capacity since he left the governorship after announcing his homosexuality. He says that he's entered a seminary and is now in debt. His soon-to-be ex-wife says that the ex-governor could make significant money, but has simply decided not to. The question is a simple one. What of those who decide to do God's work in the midst of a divorce proceeding or shortly thereafter? Now, you might think that it's a free country, but when there's child support or even spousal support at issue, courts will take a critical look at any spouse's career change. Let's say that the judge presiding over the divorce believes that one spouse could earn more money and isn't doing so to the detriment of the children or the former spouse. The judge could decide that a pre-divorce level of income should be imputed to the spouse. One can't usually go to work at the local fast food restaurant after being a stockbroker, for example. And don't cue the choir of angels. This applies even to those spouses who hear God's call during or after divorce proceedings. Take the admittedly somewhat unusual case of the medical doctor from Florida who warned the court that he would join a monastery if forced to pay child support. The judge signed the child support order and also ordered the man to continue his work as a medical doctor. But after 3 weeks, the man quit the medical profession, went to live in an abbey, and never took a job that paid him more than minimum wage. The court found the would-be monk criminally liable for failing to pay child support. But contrast that tale with that of the California sales executive who, after paying spousal support for 3 years, joined a monastery and took a vow of poverty. The man convinced the judge in his divorce case to change his support obligations to zero, even though his ex-wife objected. The court found that the man's desire to enter a monastery was heartfelt and wasn't simply an avoidance tactic. It refused to base spousal support on any ability to earn. What all this means is that both sides might have a prayer in the McGreevy divorce. There's no one rule that fits every scenario in these cases, judges have written. One man's calling is another man's cowering. At the same time the New York Times covered the McGreevy divorce last week, it also featured an article about a couple chasing utopia by selling off everything they own. It's a trend called voluntary simplicity. If you're happily married, that simplicity is a perfectly acceptable option. But if you're in the middle of a divorce, you might be forced to chase utopia elsewhere. I'm Amy Gaida.
Amy Gaida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, mostly cloudy later on today, the low 50 degrees, partly sunny tomorrow, the high 68. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, the low 44, partly to mostly sunny Thursday, the high 73. Partly cloudy Thursday evening, the low 57. For Friday, partly sunny, warm, more humid, with a high of 82 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Tuesday, May 27th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.